11, 10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
Hey folks, it is Monday, May 18th, 2015, and you're listening to episode 15 of the Beyond the Handle podcast. I'm your host, Alan, also known as @Slip on Twitter. That's Slip with five eyes, or Slip. On today's episode, I speak with Lisa Webinger. On Twitter, you can find her at Ms. Behavior. And Lisa is very involved in the community around here in Winnipeg, both in terms of charitable drives, which she has driven a lot using social media to raise funds and awareness for various causes around our city. And she was also involved in the last civic election, running for the position of school trustee. We get our thoughts on issues involving the schools, specifically over in the River East and Transcona area where she ran, and also in terms of her experience for running for the position. We talk about a number of other issues that are in the news or that have been raised through Lisa's Twitter feed over the last couple of months as well. It's a really interesting conversation. Definitely check it out. Last week's episode with DJ Penny Lane was another great episode of Beyond the Handle. I really appreciated having Penny Lane on the show with me. She is celebrating 10 years on the air with UMFM. Her radio show Punks and Parkas is definitely something you should listen to. You can find it over at punksandparkas.podomatic.com. Or it is a free download on iTunes, so go give that a listen. With all that being said, let's get right into the interview. This is Lisa Webinger, known as @MisBehavior over on Twitter, here on Beyond the Handle. All right, everybody, this is episode 15 of Beyond the Handle, and over the phone I've got another guest who I'm very excited to speak with because I have been following her on Twitter for a couple of years now. I have Lisa Webinger on Twitter. She would be found if you searched for @MisBehavior. Is that behavior with a U or not?
No U.
No U, so the American spelling.
Yeah, there's a lady actually in New Zealand that has the one with the U. We got to know each other just based on the fact that our Twitter has Twitter handles were the same, but she beat me to the punch.
I always start off by asking, what is the story behind the misbehavior handle?
There's nothing exciting behind it at all. I really don't remember how I came to it. I think it kind of popped up when I was bouncing names, stage names, trying to figure out what stage name I was going to go by for burlesque, and this one kind of popped up, and although it didn't work for burlesque, it kind of just landed on Twitter, and I haven't bothered to change it, but it is kind of embarrassing to introduce yourself as misbehavior. I can't stand doing it, but I can't bring myself to change it either.
And you ran for, what was it, school trustee, right, in the civic election?
Yeah, I unsuccessfully ran for school trustee in the River East Transcona School Division.
Did the misbehavior handle have to come up in conversation then?
No, I didn't have to explain it once. And I mean, I did use social media to an extent for campaigning, but it didn't take a lot of, didn't gain a lot of ground. But no, it didn't come up. I kind of left it off the literature because I figured that was just one less thing I needed to explain. But I found running for school trustee that the people who were most interested in talking to you were senior citizens. And I don't think that was going to come up anyway.
Not a lot of them on Twitter, probably.
No, not that I found. Although there is one lady. She claims to be in her 80s or 90s. I wish I could remember her name offhand. And she posts about knitting, but she's got like the greatest sense of humor. I've been following her for about 6 months. She's absolutely hilarious.
I'm going to definitely talk to you a little bit about what it was like to run in this election. But the first thing I really, really wanted to ask you today was, when I imagine you sitting there talking to me, I imagine you waiting for a train to pass.
Actually, it's funny because I'm in my car and there is currently a train at the tracks by my house. So I am legitimately waiting for a train as we speak right now.
All right, so tell us a story about this, because I think this is what a lot of people see almost every day on your Twitter, is a picture of you waiting while a train is passing. You're in Transcona?
I do. I live in Transcona. I'm about 3 minutes away from the tracks at Bernay, close to Bernie Wolf Community School, and there seems to be an increase in volume of trains in the area recently, coupled with the fact that Plessy's has been closed for a year and a half now, I think, waiting for the underpass to be built. But I get stuck at a train 3-4 times a day on average. They run by my place about every 15 minutes. So it's a constant state of frustration, because there are times where I can't get out of Transcona. No matter how hard I try, I'm completely boxed in by boxcars.
Not that you're always trying to get out of Transcona, right? Transcona is a lovely place.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes I'm trying to get back in. it is, you know, it really is a lovely community. It's quaint. It's quiet. It's far enough out of town, actually, where you get a really good look of northern lights and stargazing at drinks, that kind of thing. There's not a lot of light pollution. So right from my backyard, it's a phenomenal view looking up. So I do really appreciate that aspect of it, too.
Now, of course, a lot of listeners of this show are local, but for people that aren't local to Winnipeg, if you were to describe to them what Transcona is, both in reality as well as in, I guess, Winnipeg folklore, what would you tell them?
Pink flamingos. We are the pink flamingo capital of the world. Classic pink flamingos. Obviously, they're not native to Canada, but yeah, this is something that started in the 50s, and it just caught on. And everywhere you look in Transcona, you've got neighbors will have one or two, kind of as a joke. They've embraced it. It was initially used, I think, to make fun of almost how trashy the neighborhood is. And it's not. It's just a really, really lovely neighborhood. There's 3,000 new homes being built. Tons of new families are moving in. But we've kind of embraced this flamingo trend, and they're absolutely everywhere. I mean, I have about 55 of them in my garage.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I'll be putting some of them out, and they'll go with my garden gnomes, because you can't really have one without the other. But it is. It's a really neat thing. It's cultural. And anywhere you go in the city, if you ask somebody what you think of when you think of Transcona, they'll either tell you trains or flamingos.
Or Kildonan in place.
Or Kildonan place. Yeah, they're my best friend for life. Twitter account. I absolutely love their Twitter account. It's so fantastic. It's funny because it's an inanimate object, but the people who run the account have really done an excellent job at branding and bringing them all to life.
Do you also do the High Neighbor Days Festival when it's on?
Yes, I've attended. I've lived in Transcona now for 12 years. I didn't start attending the High Neighbor Festival until about 5 or 6 years ago. And it's one of the largest street festivals in Winnipeg. It's certainly one of the most, the oldest. It's been running, I think this is its 52nd year. And it is, it's a lot of fun. You know, the streets are all closed down. There's midway rides, there's carnival games, there's entertainment, there's bands, there's vendors, there's fireworks, it's just a really good time. There's a parade, and nobody does it quite like Transcona does it, that's for sure.
I agree with you. I actually, fun fact, used to Highland dance in that parade, but that was a long, long time ago.
Did you really? Well, I think you should, it's not too late to get a float in. You could maybe dust off your, That's your uniform and away you go.
Yeah, I'm going to have to get in shape first, I think. But maybe one day if I lose a bet.
I'll take you up on that one. When this is done, we'll think of a bet. And for next year, if you lose, will you get a float next year? We're going to put it out there right now.
A float? I don't know if I'll get a float, but I can. We can figure out a bet if you'd like, and I can do something Highland Dance related, yes. And now, I'm assuming that, you know, the bet that we'll end up agreeing on is going to be involved with something either community related or charitable, because that's the other thing that I think is I've most noticed about you and your presence on Twitter. So I wanted to talk about a couple of specific campaigns that I've seen you be involved in. But before I get into that, has being involved in your community or raising money for charity or awareness, all of those things, is this something that started with you when you were a kid, or how did this evolve?
No, I don't think I did too much when I was younger. I did a little bit of like door-to-door canvassing for Heart and Stroke Foundation and the Canadian Cancer Society in my late teens. But I really started getting more community involved when my daughter was school-aged, And I got involved with the parent council, which was really my first kind of foray into anything really community oriented. And when I became chair of the parent council, we kind of spearheaded a campaign to get a new play structure, which we managed to do in under 10 months. We raised well over $80,000. It's an amazing play structure. And it just kind of spiraled from there. I found that it was something I really enjoyed. I loved putting on events. I loved fundraising. I liked finding causes. So from that point forward, I was always looking for ways to get involved and to try and make a difference. And like I said, putting on events is really like it's a hobby for me. So it's just things I do in my downtime.
One of the most prominent events that I've seen you involved in, and you made reference to the flamingos in at your place, is Get Flocked, hashtag Get Flocked.
Yeah, that one was a lot of fun.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how that came about and what it is?
Sure. That was, I did that one last year. That's what I did in support of the Challenge for Life. But there's still time to register for Challenge for Life, by the way. It happens first Saturday in June. It's for the Canadian, or for Cancer Care Manitoba Foundation, which is one of my all-time favorite organizations in Manitoba. The people there are absolutely fantastic. I was on a team, or was the captain of a team in 2010, and we raised $16,000. And so I decided it was something I wanted to do again last year. But it's hard to constantly be hitting people for donations. And because I tend to do a lot of different things, I feel like I'm going back to the well all the time, and I really don't want to drain my friends and family dry.
Yep.
So I needed to find a more creative way that I could kind of branch out beyond my immediate network and get funds in. So being from Transcona, I thought, well, okay, let's see if I can figure out a way to incorporate flamingos. So what I did was for a donation to my walk for the Challenge for Life, I would go in stealth mode, normally in the evening, and I would set up a flock of flamingos in somebody's yard, unsuspecting yard. So whether it was for, I did it for birthdays, for anniversaries, I did it for somebody, their neighbors were a huge Leafs fan, so I did it just kind of to mock them. Some people did it just for entertainment, so I raised just under $4,000 strictly on Get Flocked. I really didn't ask anybody for donations, so I really managed to branch out beyond my immediate network for that one, and I didn't have to kind of harass people with my hand out begging for money for the ninth time that year. So it took off a lot larger than I thought it would. It was, weeks at a time. I didn't have evenings to myself because I was constantly moving plastic birds around.
I did enjoy, though, the commentary on the stalking. Sounded like you're an undercover cop, kind of, scoping out a place for a period of time before you can take action.
Well, yeah, if the lights were still on, because I flocked the business and there were still people in there, so I needed to wait. And of course, the whole front of the business was windows, so I had to wait for them to go in the back, so I didn't get caught, not once. And you mentioned earlier my love affair with Kildonan Place. They actually donated the flamingos to me too, which was absolutely amazing. So I didn't even have to go out of pocket on it.
What was the longest period of time you've had to, you had to kind of sit and stalk one location?
It was about an hour. I sat in a car for about an hour and I just felt so creepy because there were people walking by, and I mean, I've got my overhead light on and I'm trying to like slink low in my car to look completely natural.
That sounds very natural.
Right, and it was pretty, and I was worried actually. At one point, a police car had driven past me twice, and I didn't notice it was the same car, but I thought, like, he's faking me out. I gotta go. So I had to drive around the block and park somewhere else, because I felt at this point, well, I'm casing the joint, they're casing me, and I didn't know how I was going to explain having all these birds in my car as I'm sneaking around, and, I didn't know the people who were sending me there, and I didn't know the people who lived in the home, so I couldn't even explain myself away, so I just drove away and came back and parked on another side street until the coast was clear. I was always worried that there was going to be a dog or somebody come outside, and I'm just glad you're not allowed to shoot people on sight in Canada.
You said you didn't get caught, but were there any close calls this year?
No. I it wasn't even close for a moment, because a light came on in a house and I thought, oh, I'm kind of dead to rights here. I'm only half done. I'm in the middle of their yard. There's nowhere to hide. But as soon as the light went on, it went off again. So I don't know if they just came out of another room. There was no close calls, but you're really, I mean, I was stressed out the entire time I was doing it. I felt like every noise I made was amplified. You know, where in reality, nobody probably noticed what I was doing. People are so involved in their own lives that they don't care what I'm doing. I mean, at one point, somebody drove by when I was putting flamingos in the yard. They didn't even slow down. It was close to midnight, and I'm running around back and forth to the car in this yard. It's full of flamingos. They didn't even slow down to see what it was. They just kept right on going. So people tend to mind their own business.
Well, you are in Transcona, right? It's probably not the oddest sight.
No, but most of my flocks were actually outside of Transcona.
Okay.
So it wasn't unique too. There was a few in Transcona, but I was all over the city, which was also exciting that people were kind of jumping on board. I really didn't know how it was going to go. I still actually get phone calls and emails asking if I'm still doing it, and it's been over a year since the campaign has ended.
Is this something that you are going to do again this summer?
I'm not going to do it this summer. The walk is in June, so I don't believe I have enough time between now and like June 5th when the walk is to raise the minimum $1,000. But it is something I am definitely going to bring up again in the future. I have the birds. It was really easy to throw together. It's not a lot of cost. It's just a time investment, and it's fun. It was a lot of fun. So it is definitely something I will revisit in the future.
Another one that I noticed you did, I think, last summer was the hashtag Fill My Ford campaign.
Yeah.
How did that? One seemed to come about kind of just out of the blue. You just came up with an idea and went with it?
Yeah, it was bantering. I was going back and forth with the Twitter account for London Drug St. Patel because I don't interact with people, just buildings. And they're one of the main sponsors for this five. It's the event is called Five Hole for Food. And again, it's happening this year too, and they go across Canada, and it's just a street hockey game, and you get in with perishable or non-perishable food items for a local food bank. So here in Winnipeg, the items go to Solo Mission, and London Drugs was kind of talking about it, and we got back and forth into this banter, and I don't even remember who challenged who, but I think I said to him, you know, I can probably raise more food than you can. And so they took me up on it. So I immediately came up with the hashtag Fill My Ford because I drive a Ford. And I just encouraged people to drop off non-perishable food items to me to beat out the store. Between the two of us, we raised close to 3,000 pounds of food, and the entire event raised 12,000.
Very nice.
Yeah, so it was really, really exciting. They still claim they beat me. I don't think so. I think that's just them trying to save face. But
did you have stakes involved in this one? I don't mean like food stakes.
No.
Did you have a wager?
No, the only wager was is if I beat them, they were going to give me a gift card to London Drugs. And so I just donated the gift card, and they ended up just giving the gift card to Solo Mission on top of it all. So it was win-win for the food bank.
Hey, and then every year you do the Movember campaign,
yeah.
Is that right?
I do. Last year was the first year I was on a team. The year prior, Illegal Curve, the radio show on TSN.
Yep.
Ezzy is one of the hosts, and he's an amazing human being. I don't know if you had an opportunity to meet him or not.
I not yet. Nope.
Oh, he's great. He's fantastic. I absolutely adore him. So they have a team every year. So 2 years ago, I was making chocolate mustaches, and I took the proceeds and I donated it to their team. And then last year they invited me to join as a Mo-Sista. And so again, we sold it, and we raised, Ezzy and I raised just over $2,000, and I raised close to $1,200, mainly primarily on the sale of chocolate mustaches, which is something I am going to do again this year. I'm looking forward to it. I'm really hoping that I can raise $2,000 alone on the mustaches. And then if we set a goal, I don't know actually if he's going to invite me back. I hope he does. If not, I'll start my own team because it's a lot of fun. This is something I managed to get involved with at work. My customers kind of jump on board. I've actually got one of my customers has already told me that come November, they'll just buy like 100 mustaches off me and sell them on my behalf at work, but they'll kind of front the money.
Okay.
Which is great. So I've already got people on board to take them, to sell them. last year, I was really lucky. A number of craft shows let me get in and sell the product there. They didn't charge me for a table. They held 50-50s. They let me take a portion of the proceeds to go towards the cause. So people have been really, really supportive. It's one of the great things about Winnipeg is that they are some, like, Winnipeggers are some of the most generous people I've ever had the pleasure of meeting. Like, anytime I've come up with an idea, and it's all it is I throw an idea out there. I mean, if people don't jump on board, it's dead in the water, but they've always just championed it and supported it, which has allowed me to do more things to support the community. So I'm really, really grateful.
You maintain a community involvement sort of, you know, ongoing all the time over the course of the year. But again, as we mentioned at the start of our conversation, you ran for school trustee in your area of town. What prompted you to make the decision?
Being involved in schools, I got involved with committees when she was in grade 2, and it was a K-8 school. And, the more involved you are, the more you kind of see the goings on and what's going on behind the scenes and some of the deficiencies as well as the assets, but you really get to see what you think is broken. And I just was getting extraordinarily frustrated with the public school system. I didn't feel there was enough support there for students that were excelling. And I actually pulled my daughter out of public school. She doesn't attend public school anymore. She's in private school. And she was in private school when I ran for school trustee. And it was actually one of my talking points was that I was so frustrated with the system that I completely removed my child from it. And that was really why I decided to run. I was kind of passionate about education. I believe the public school system has an amazing potential that it's just not reaching.
Any specifics that you can point to that you think you'd like to see improved?
Well, I guess one of my biggest issues that I found was my daughter actually did a fundraiser at the school when she was in grade 7, and her and a friend raised $2,000 for cancer care. They worked really, really, really hard, but in the process, she missed about a week of school. She was there, she attended, but her teachers were gracious enough to kind of let her work on this fundraiser during school time, so she was able to miss class, because of the penny drive, to roll pennies, to count pennies, and she missed an entire week of classes, but she wasn't coming home with homework. And so when I spoke to her teachers, who were amazing, they just said that, she wasn't really falling behind. There wasn't anything she needed to do. And I just thought, if my child is able to miss a week of school and she doesn't need to do anything to catch up, like there's this problem there. Either they're not teaching or she needs to be challenged more, and there needs to be something in place that can challenge her. So that was my main issue. And when she was younger too, I was always looking for homework, and they said if I wanted to give her homework, I should go buy a book at Walmart and kind of challenge her at home.
Okay.
to give her extra work that way, because she was doing just fine according to class standards. And I understand it's difficult for teachers to try and cater to all the varying needs of the students in the class. And the ones that need the most attention are the ones that are struggling. But when you're focusing on the ones that are struggling, the ones who are excelling, well, they're neglected, they're bored, they're finding ways to occupy themselves, and we're not giving them anything to work towards. I know with honor roll, if you get into junior high, I believe, you can take your AP, your IB, or just your standard classes, but the honor roll is the same no matter what level of courses that you're taking. So somebody who's in the IB program and is earning a 95%, they're getting the same credit as somebody taking the general education. And the level of work that they have to do to get 90% is completely different, yet they're being held to the same standard, which I also think is problematic.
Yeah, it sounds bizarre to me.
And I also don't agree with the everybody gets a trophy and everybody needs to participate and everybody needs to play. I don't really think that that's something that should be happening. I think you earn your wins and you earn your losses. And if you don't get a trophy, you don't get a trophy. Good luck. Try harder next time, hopefully. So there was too much coddling going on for me. And I not that I think from a trustee level that was something that I could accurately or adequately fix, but it is a discussion that could have maybe generated change down the road. I just found that the trustees that were in place were kind of antiquated. They've been there for a very long time. There were no fresh ideas. In fact, as the trustee, he was previously the chair. He's no longer the chair. It actually blocked me on Twitter when I started running.
Okay.
He still has me blocked. He won't answer my questions. He's never answered questions. I don't know why I'm blocked, but that's the kind of level of communication there is, right? As I'm a parent, I live in your ward. I have concerns, and not only do you not respond to me, but you completely block access to what you are posting. And the things he posts about his grandchildren and, you know, sporting events, and the son had the wrong date on the front page of the paper versus anything even remotely related to education. So that was my other issue with it, is just that it was dated. I thought they needed new ideas. Honestly, at the end of the day, I think years from now, the trustees, the position shouldn't exist. That it's a position that needs to be eventually phased out.
In favor of what? Or just not have it at all?
Not have school trustees at all. No, it needs to be, you don't even know where to start. I mean, we've got less than an hour, and this is a conversation that you can't even begin to scrape the surface of. But the role of trustee is kind of useless. In my opinion, like these are people, they're not in education. They're, you know, like me, I could have been voted in as a trustee. And while I have good ideas and I'm able to get things done, I don't have a background in education. I don't have a background in finances. They're working on a huge, 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 huge budget, with the vast majority of them not even having an education in any sort of finances. And what makes you qualified to be making these decisions? And you're making decisions based on taxes that people are paying. And it's education, of course, is run by, or governed by, the province, but it comes off your municipal taxes, and it's too big for just any Joe Blow to be able to be running, but yet that's what we do.
Now, was this your first foray into running for any sort of political office?
Yes.
And how did you find the experience overall?
It was definitely enlightening. It was really, really neat to meet people in the community, because I met all kinds of people that I never would have had the opportunity to meet in any other day-to-day activities. And it is a lot of work. And really, what I also realized is, I think at the end of the day, it's the more money you have to throw at it, the better you're going to do. I only spent about $300 on my campaign from start to finish, because I really wasn't interested in investing that kind of money in it. But the average, I think, when I was talking to some of the other candidates, was $500, $3,000. I didn't have any lawn signs. I didn't, and that's a learning curve, because with trustee, honestly, the only thing you have is name recognition. People are not paying attention to who's running for trustee. It doesn't pertain to a lot of them if you're not a parent. And even if you are a parent, you're not that dialed into it. I mean, when I was going door to door, what I did find was people kept asking me what my plans were to fix the potholes in Transcona, and I didn't really know how to answer it without being rude. But I'm like, that's kind of outside the jurisdiction of a school trustee, but if you call 311 and let them know that it's there, I'm sure somebody will come out and patch it. But yeah, people really didn't know what a school trustee was, what they did, what the role was, what the point was, and they just, you know, and I also heard, what was your name again? Because I tended to vote for the top two names. So it really, name recognition was everything, and I wish I would have had a little more of it, but it was a neat experience. I don't know if I would do it again. By the time the next election rolls around, my daughter will be completely through the school system, and I imagine my passion for it will have flickered out a little bit, but It was a neat experience. I'm glad I had the opportunity to do it. I met some great people who are now friends that I'd never known even existed are now some of my closer friends. So there were some definite benefits to it.
Are there any other types of political office that you'd have any interest in running for or being involved in?
No, not currently. I don't know that I have the experience right now. Mind you, where do you start, right? Like, experience, you kind of learn on the fly at times. I'm definitely interested in volunteering and helping people along, and wherever I see a need in the community, I like to help fill it. Whether or not that ever plays out into another political role down the road, maybe. I mean, you can never say never. I don't want to get held to a yes or a no, because everything comes back to bite you regardless of what you say. So,
that's right. I'm gonna run this tape down the road and be like, you said this.
See, you never know.
All right, let's take a little break from the interview to go through some housekeeping items and give you some information about this show. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can look us up at Beyond the Handle is the handle for the show. So definitely give us a follow there. We are on Facebook. Do a search for Beyond the Handle and we will pop right up there for you. If you are not listening to this show via iTunes or Stitcher, you can go to each of those platforms and subscribe to the show. Again, just go in and search for Beyond the Handle. We will pop up there for you. Click on subscribe and the new episodes will download to your device every week as soon as they are posted, which is nice, easy, and convenient. Of course, if you just want to hear a stream of a specific episode, you can also go to beyondthehandle.podomatic.com and you can find the show right there and listen to any episode that you would like to hear. If you'd like to email me and give me some feedback, recommend a guest, or if you'd like to be a guest yourself, I'd love to hear from you. The email address is beyondthehandle@gmail.com. And again, any feedback via Twitter or via email is very much appreciated. We are a part of the Garbage Hill Network of podcasts. This is Winnipeg's first podcast network and features a number of local podcasts from around the city of Winnipeg. You can give them a follow at Garbage Hill on Twitter, and their website is www.garbagehillnetwork.com. So with all that being said, let's get back into the interview. This is Lisa Webinger, known as at NizBehavior on Twitter, here on Beyond the Handle. I was hoping to talk to you about a couple of things that I've kind of seen recently where you've had... I guess you've been involved in the news in some part, I think mainly through social networking work. I don't know, wait, social networking, right? That's the proper term. One of them was there was a day not too long ago where there was an ongoing series of tweets with regard to an experience, and it sounds like a poor experience that you had in one of the ERs at a hospital in the city.
Yeah, that was I was in the ER at Seven Oaks General Hospital in February with my grandmother, who was there under the suspicion of stroke. I took her to the doctors. The doctors referred her over there with a note. And the scene in the ER just kind of went from bad to worse. It was chaotic. There was a woman laying on the floor. She was screaming. She was crying. We were there for about 4 hours, even though it eventually played out that, yes, my grandmother had a stroke. It took off on Twitter. Like, initially, as I was tweeting just to, well, I do that a lot. I mean, I have nothing to say and I say it all the time, but I was tweeting just to get rid of my boredom. We've been there for so long. And, as things started playing out, I just started tweeting what was happening around me and it took off. And I can't remember who it was that suggested that a hashtag be created when I started talking about this serious issue that was unfolding in the ER, so that's where Winnipeg ER was the hashtag that we went with, and then other people started talking about the issue that they'd had while waiting in ERs, and it got a lot of traction. A lot of politicians were jumping on board. A lot of news outlets were jumping on board. I know the National Post actually was tweeting about it. It really got out of hand. It kind of got a lot larger, a lot faster than I thought it was. And then I started worrying too, is that, you know, my grandma's in the hospital now, and I've kind of been really vocal about how unhappy I am with them. But I mean, I did say a positive thing too. Once she was triaged and in, that the care that she was receiving was pretty on point. It was just getting to that point in our day. But it made enough noise that the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority actually issued a statement about what had happened. And I've actually been going back and forth right now with the health minister's office for assistance has looked into the issue for me. I just spoke with her again earlier in the week, and she's going to be doing a little bit more digging. So they did really take it seriously and jump on board. It's just unfortunate that it needs to be this loud mm-hmm. before anything gets looked at. And honestly, while I was there with my grandma, while I was concerned about her, my bigger concern was the woman who was in obvious distress, laying on the floor, vomiting, crying, and screaming, being ignored for 2.5 hours.
There was a story that was then written, it was with the CBC, correct, here in Winnipeg?
Yeah, yeah.
And then to make things even better, after describing this whole ordeal and getting it out on the CBC, you have to scroll through the comment section, as always.
Yeah.
The most
enlightened... I try not to read them. Most of the time I don't. And it's the absolute worst to read, which you're mentioned anywhere in there, because it's never anything positive about you that you're going to see.
And somebody referred to you as the princess?
Yeah. They called me a princess, and they said I was looking for my 33 minutes of fame, which, 33, which is an off number. But, yeah, they called me a princess, and they said that, they know who I am in real life, and that I love to get attention, and I like the drama. And I just thought, so I said, hey, princess here. If you know who I am, I'd love to have a conversation with you, because how do I come across as a princess? Although it doesn't make me believe that it is somebody I know in real life, because I work in a male-dominated industry, and a couple of my customers have taken to calling me princess. And one of them, he does it, and he doesn't do it to be rude. It was hi, dear. Like, a term of endearment.
Yeah.
And a couple of the people heard him say it, and they mocked me by calling me princess, because they thought it was hilarious, because I'm so not princess-like. So it stuck that I get called that by this handful of people. So it makes me wonder, it's not the first time that anybody's used it, so it could very well be somebody who does know me and knows that I have on occasion been called that, but not seriously. But yeah, it was unfortunate that they said that I was just trying to make a name for myself and, Oprah baby, I had to wait. And it was just, if you read the article, you kind of see that I wasn't complaining about the weight for me. I was more concerned about a woman I don't even know. I went to patient advocacy. I went to the triage nurse twice. I went and spoke to security. Trying to get this woman help. And that was kind of the crux of the issue, was this woman I don't even know. But okay, I want to be internet famous, so I'm just going to keep chiseling away at that.
Did the, let's call him the troll, from the comments section, never responded to your request to get in touch?
No.
No, of course not.
And then I think they closed the comment section, so I don't know. Those things, I try to stay away in any article, because it's infuriating that some of the garbage that people just regurgitate is serves no purpose. It doesn't bend. I mean, occasionally, and I'm not saying that all negative comments are bad, right? Criticism is needed. The constructive criticism is always welcome. It's kind of often how you phrase your critiquing, and some people just try to be so hurtful. Of people you don't even know, I don't understand why you would want to be that hurtful to somebody, but it takes all kinds, I guess.
And just so that everybody out there is aware, this was a negative comment amongst a sea of positivity and agreement and support, right?
Yes, yeah. The vast majority of the comments were supportive and kind of, appalled or full of the whole, I'm not surprised, typical. Which is unfortunate, too, that it's met with, this is typical. Because it shouldn't be typical. This is not what you should be facing when you're looking for urgent or emergent care. You don't, and I mean, I understand, because the Winnipeg Regional Health Authority kind of wanted to highlight the fact that it's always a stressful time when you go into an ER. And it's like, I wasn't expecting kittens, lollipops, rainbows, and cotton candy fluff. I was expecting, though, that if there's a disturbance, that you're going to A, address it, and B, ensure that people can be as comfortable as possible given the situation and given the circumstances. And, when I'm in there with an 89-year-old woman who's under the suspicion of having a stroke, and her blood pressure is 194 over 80, and there's somebody screaming, and my grandmother is now getting upset and yelling if anybody can help, that's just a bad scene all around, and I think it needs to be addressed. It shouldn't just be, there's nowhere to put anyone.
Another interesting thing that came up recently, and I think you had something that you wrote about this published online too. We just passed Mother's Day.
And yeah.
What better gift for your mom than a vacuum cleaner?
Yeah. See, that just started as kind of a joke, right? Canadian Tire put out a flyer and talked to her mom was a vacuum cleaner, and there was a number of people on Twitter who were like, did you see this? And I thought it was kind of funny, so I just started quoting the original tweet and just adding, like, sarcastic remarks to it, because it's not harmful, it's stupid at this point, but you really believe that the best pick for mom right now is a vacuum cleaner, so, you know, Canadian Tire kind of jumped on board, was like, hey, sorry, we'll do better next year. And then the following week, their top picks for mom were a blender and cookware, and it was just, you know, get with it. Get with it. And Canadian Tire has been actually bad. There's a, last year, towards the end of winter this year, maybe, they had the bike accessories for sale, blue and pink. They were made by the same company, same packaging. The only difference between the two packages was one was pink, one was blue, and the pink one was $13.99, and the blue one was $9.99. You're paying for pink, which is common. It costs more money for women to dry clean their shirts than it costs for men, and women's razors cost more than men's, and Thick Pens came out with pens for her, which they're just standard pen, but they're in pretty pastel colors, and they cost more than a standard pen. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous. We make less money, but all our stuff costs twice as much.
Yeah, so, that sounds really fair.
Yeah, so it really just kind of started off as this is kind of silly, and then it branched out, because it hit a nerve with people, and especially, I'm going to go back to Canadian Tire and pick on them, because they just had a giveaway, like a Twitter party, I think. Yeah, like an online Twitter party where you just, you know, answer questions and you get involved, and at the end they give away a prize. And the prize that they were giving away was barbecue, which is fine and well. Like, you know, it's exciting. Winning a barbecue is great for anybody. But I just had to laugh because in the picture that they were using for this barbecue, it's a son and his father, right? So it's two men out there doing their manly barbecuing, and then you look in the flyer and they're like, top tips for mom, get her a mixer. And mom and the daughter are in the kitchen wearing aprons with just a little bit of flour on their nose. Mom, I just thought we quit catering to these stereotypes. I barbecue in my house. I always have, whether there was a man living there or not. My grill, don't touch it. Leave the meat alone. And, you know, the stereotype, it's so dated. It's so overdone. And, you know, the best thing that Canadian Tire could do, in my opinion, is when they come out with their Father's Day flyer, is top picks for dad, and they also have vacuum cleaners. Because other than that, there's really, it just speaks to the level of sexism in day-to-day life that we're not even really aware of, because it's just so commonplace.
And on that topic, this is not something that you were directly involved in, but I wanted to ask for your opinion on an issue that came up in the news this week. Are you aware of this hashtag FHRITP business?
Yes.
Okay.
I am.
So there is a reporter with City News in Toronto. Her name is Shauna Hunt, and she was covering the aftermath of a Toronto FC soccer game in Toronto this past weekend. And there has been, I guess, a prank, or I don't know, a joke, or I don't know what you would want to call it, but there's been this trend over the last year where, I guess, well, a reporter, and generally female reporters, are interviewing people, then someone in the background walks by and yells, F her right in the P, for lack of a better term. So there were people in Toronto that did this, and this reporter actually stopped her interview and went over and started interviewing the guys that had done this. And all of them, there was two that were primary ones there, but there was about a group of four. But there were two guys in particular that were very unapologetic, you know, just continued to carry on like it was the funniest thing in the world. And as a result of this, now one of them so far has lost their job with Hydro One. And the whole group of them have been banned from Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment facilities for a period of 1 year. So, I guess first of all, talking about the issue, what were your thoughts?
See, the first time I ever saw a YouTube video of that, I laughed. I was like, "Hey, that's the guy's an idiot, but it's funny." I did think it was funny because it was just so off the wall. But I didn't realize it. It almost become like an epidemic of women being harassed constantly. And what was this woman's name? The one, that kind of took the guys to task?
Her name was Shauna Hunt.
Shauna Hunt. She was saying, I think it was her that was saying that this kind of happens to her every time she's got a microphone in her hand. There's some idiot behind her that thinks this is funny and this is what you do. So, I mean, other than the fact that it's it's exhausting. It's their job. You know, you're not going to McDonald's and standing over some guy at a deep fryer yelling at him as he's trying to do his job. So it's distracting. It's disrespectful. They're going as far as to say that it's sexist and misogyny at work, and, you know, it's enough is enough. And I do agree enough is enough. And I know some of them have taken it a little too far. I don't believe the guy should have lost his job.
That was actually going to be my next question for you was, do you think that he should have lost his job?
No, I don't. I don't think he should have lost his job. I think that's, taking it a little far. I mean, he is an idiot. And the guy who lost his job actually isn't the one who yelled it to begin with. He was a belligerent moron. When they were asking him questions, he was swearing up and down and saying that it was lucky that they weren't putting a dildo in her ear like they're doing in England. And when asked if his mother would approve, she's like, yeah, my mom's probably dying with laughter. So I'd be curious to know if mom is laughing.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't instigate it. I'd be curious to know if the one who did yell it is going to suffer any sort of repercussions when it comes to his professional life. But I don't think firing him is really going to do the trick. Why not, you know, work with him, through work, he's got to come forward, apologize to his company, apologize to this woman, maybe go and, I don't know, some sort of sensitivity training. It was ridiculous. It was inappropriate. But to be fired, and now this is going to follow him around everywhere. And I know some people are just like, oh, it's appalling thinking this poor guy, how is he going to rebuild his life? He didn't hurt anyone. And I know the argument is being made that this plays into a bigger issue like rape culture. And I understand that, and I understand why you would feel that way. But really, he was a drunk moron at the soccer game. And I'm assuming he was drunk, actually. I don't know for a fact. I'm hoping he was drunk. Not again, that's an excuse, because that just opens up. But I'm just dancing around the subject, because I feel everything I say is going to be a fix for somebody else. I don't think he should have been fired. I think that he needs to come forward. He should be apologizing. He should be apologizing to his employer. I don't know how far the reach of their policy goes, if he can even be legally terminated.
It was. I think there's been stories about that, and I don't know if it's because I don't know if Hydro One has I believe that it's a public company, but I'm not 100% sure. Guess I've got the internet in front of me, so while you're talking, I will check.
Yeah. So, but I do really think that he shouldn't have lost his job. I do think he should come forward. He should apologize. He needs to take complete and entire ownership of what he's done. Backpedaling isn't going to excuse it. You know, saying that, you know, they're caught up in the moment or that he had too much to drink isn't going to excuse it, because it's not an excuse. You're an idiot. It was idiotic. It's not funny. It's exhausting. It's tiring. All she was doing her job, and you're disruptive. And honestly, nobody cares what you have to say. And if anything, that guy's a princess looking for his 33 minutes of fame.
Hydro One is a public company. It's a Crown corporation with the government of Ontario. So I don't know if that gives them further jurisdiction to take action. I don't quite know how exactly that works. I'm with you. Honestly, like, even now, I mean, I say stupid shit all the time, but when I was in my 20s, and I don't know how old these guys were, they're maybe a little bit in their later 20s, but I know that when I was in my 20s and my early 20s, I'd say stupid shit, and I'd find something like this initially funny, but, you know, then you think about, you know, as a one-time thing, someone shouting at a camera, like it's going to happen from time to time, but when it turns into an epidemic, you know, eventually...
Well, and somebody's got to put their foot down, and unfortunately, they've been made the poster child for this, right? Because at some point, somebody has to be the poster child, and this poor schmuck is now the poster child for, you know, idiocy. But the other issue is with him being fired. That's just, you're saying when you were younger, you know, you occasionally did something stupid. You and I don't know how old you are. I'm thinking we're roughly in the same age.
Late 30s.
Okay, mid to late. But
yep.
Easy on the late. Thank you. we kind of escaped that barely, where we got to be stupid without it possibly coming back to bite us, right? It's not stored online somewhere forever. There's no soundbite of it. There's no smartphones being pulled out at any given moment. Like, anything you do now, you're running the risk. Like, who knows who's filming you? I mean, there's a good chance that somebody was filming me sitting in a car or watching a building so I could go out and put flamingos and wondering what I was doing. Like, there's a potential for us to be under constant supervision and not supervision, constant observation.
The first time I actually noticed this for myself, like the world that we're in, about 4 years ago, I was living for the summer in Montreal, and I was picking up my car after being serviced, and I needed to get it because I was going on a road trip the next day. So I biked on one of their Bixi bikes in Montreal, this bike rental company, got to the Canadian Tire, like clearly with 10 minutes to spare before the place was going to close, and the guy in the garage had already closed it and directed me to the store. And when I went to the store, the doors were locked and there were still people checking out, but they had locked the door. So I knocked on the door and the person at the till turned around and very clearly indicated that I was shit out of luck. I wasn't going to be getting in. So at that point I'm pissed off because I'm early. So I started like pounding on the door, just basically saying, yeah, like, you're going to open this door for me. And as I started doing that, at least three people pulled out their cell phones and started filming. And I realized right then and there, like, this is what happens, right? People lose their shit and there's someone there to capture it. So I was aware of enough of the situation. Like, as soon as those came out, I knew to stop and what I was potentially getting into. But that's the world we live in. I mean, I think for this guy, I don't think he should have lost his job either. I think that the combination of the fact that this is on the news, it's being commented by politicians in Ottawa, everybody across the country, like this is the front page story in Toronto. That's a lot, you know, like
people love to be outraged. They love to be outraged. It's, you know, their outrage is outraged. Everybody is outraged. Everything is outraged. Again, anything you read about, there's always somebody who is outraged over it, right? This guy, there, people are outraged that he would yell this at her. And there was an incident I read. It was on, I think it was on CBC, in a place called Paradise. It was Paradise. And a 12-year-old girl was injured because somebody threw a can of corn out of their window and hit her leg. And her father was outraged that this would happen to her. And I understand that it sucks, and I would be, you know, I would be fairly upset if somebody threw anything at my daughter out of the car, well, threw anything at my kid out of the car window. But the fact that he was outraged, and the fact that it became a news story, that, you know, a can of corn was tucked out of a car window, and dad is outraged, and this is outraged. Like, I saw a picture of a guy at a protest, and I don't know what he was protesting, but his sign was the best thing I've ever seen in my life. And it said, "I am mildly upset." I just thought, like, yes, thank you for leveling it out a little bit, because everybody, and that was just it too, like with this whole Canadian Tire thing, I wasn't outraged that Canadian Tire had vacuums on for a mom. I wasn't even mildly upset. I was just exhausted with the fact that it's just one more thing that that you have to contend with. You know, my daughter is going to be 16 next month, and when she was little, like 2, 3, 4 years old, you would go to McDonald's and they would ask you if they want a girl toy or a boy toy. They wouldn't distinguish what the toy was. Mm-hmm. They would just say, with your Happy Meal, do you want a girl toy or a boy toy? And I was like, well, I don't know. Well, let's have some options. And so more often than not, the boy toy was far superior to the girls, because the girls would get like a lip gloss and boys got to the car. But my daughter asked me if she was allowed to get the boy toy, or if it was weird that that's what she wanted, because she was a girl. So she was acutely aware at the age of 3 that toys apparently had a gender, and that maybe she should feel weird about asking for the boy one because she's not a boy. Toys don't have a gender, and there's nothing that you can or can't do based on the fact that you're a girl or a boy. I've got no problem with toys being sold in both pink and blue. My issue, though, is when emblazoned in glitter on the pink toy is for girls, because that's often what you get, right? Pink for girls. So now you're isolating it, and you're making it awkward for little boys who want to play with it because it's for girls. And it's completely unnecessary. Why does the pink one have to be for a girl? I mean, and there are some toys that you really don't need to pretty up. But they do. Nerf guns. You can get Nerf guns now that have black and pink darts. And they're not sold when you go to Toys R Us with the other Nerf guns. They're in the girl section with all the other pink stuff. But it's still just a dart gun or a sponge gun, but now it's better because it's pink. And it probably costs more. I didn't look at the price, but it's so unnecessary. And I understand with merchandising too, maybe you'll sell more. Like, even Lego now has pink pieces and pretty lavender pieces and you know, princess pony stables. And it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, I played with Lego and it was green and it was white and it was red and it was yellow and it was blue. And, you know, that was it. It was Lego. It wasn't for boys. It wasn't for girls. It was Lego and you built with it and that was it.
I appreciate the variety that they put into it. To me, it's just like, at some point, though, let people make their own choice. Don't just assume one is for one. And, you know, there's some arguments for how they market it because they're trying to, you know, they're rolling the dice on their best bets for who's going to purchase. But when it's all said and done, make it something that's a choice for the person to make because, you know, as a guy, you may want to, like when we were younger, we had people playing at my, when I was getting babysat, some of us played with He-Man and some of us played with Barbie. And one day we were like, let's combine them, the Barbie world and the He-Man world. And it was fun. And I didn't start collecting Barbies after that, but you shouldn't need to necessarily be made to feel like embarrassed or ashamed about that.
No, my Barbie dated Bam Bam Bigelow and G.I. Joe. So actually, speaking of gender issues, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts were on the Katy Perry chant against the Ducks.
My thought on the Katy Perry chant, I talked about this a few weeks ago with TJ Mon on here too, was that personally, I was not offended by the chant, but when the chant happened, I immediately knew it was going to be an issue, and I was unhappy about it. A, because I didn't think it was a very good chant. I thought,
oh, it's so awful.
It's just so bad. They've done so much better with the chants. And then the second part is that this is going to be the discussion now. We're going to be talking about this fucking chant for, you know, for however long.
Oh, you dropped an F-bomb. I've been holding back. I feel like we should
restart the whole thing.
Right from the beginning. Yeah, because I use a lot of that, and I'm actually really proud that I haven't said it once.
Well,
I don't ever tweet it. I don't tweet it, but I do say it frequently.
But I know that you had some commentary on the chant, and that you didn't think it was very, very good, and that you found it to be a sexist chant, correct?
I didn't care, honestly. I didn't offend me, but I could see why it would be taken as sexist because, again, it's alluding to being female is weaker, and like that's a bad thing. And, you know, we're going to just go bare bones, so women aren't as strong as men. We're not built that way. So, in essence, there's some fact to it. If you're calling him Katy Perry by inferring that he's not as strong as the rest, it's still sexist, though. I mean, just because there's some fact base to it doesn't mean it's okay. My biggest issue was that there was no creativity, like none. It was awful. It wasn't funny. It wasn't clever. It wasn't witty. It was nothing. It was no Who's Your Captain. It was no Crosby's Better. It was no Let's Go Blue Jays. Like, it was just...
And it
was disappointing that that's the best we could do. We're finally in the playoffs. You know, we're like the most talked about team. All eyes are on us, and we come up with Katy Perry.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought too. And then the other thought on that was that, you know, again, on the idea of being offensive, if someone wants to come over to my apartment, I'm going to be offensive. If they want to read my Twitter, I'm going to be offensive sometimes. You can block me out. You don't have to come over. You don't have to listen to the podcast. Like, there's a whole bunch of things to do there. But when you're a company that's running a product that, you know, you're bringing in 15,000 people and you have people all across the city watching it and you're trying to be inclusive, again, like, it's not a lot, and whether you agree or disagree with them, you can say that there was a percentage of people who didn't like the chant. They thought that it was...
And they were outraged, though. They were outraged.
Yes. And again, outrage... and outrage may be, you know, maybe it may have been too strong a sentiment, but even if you're just unhappy that the chant took place and don't think it was in good taste, That's inevitably going to, you know, speak to your product a little bit. And again, people aren't going to stop going to Jets games. And I don't think people believe that Winnipeggers are sexist or any of that business. But it's still something that puts a little bit of a taint on the product for a period of time. And at a time where all eyes are on us. And I think that we are the best fans in the league. And I don't think that we necessarily took our opportunity to prove that, like, 100%.
No, you know, as you say, tainting the product. Like, I actually don't think this reflects on True North in any way, shape, or form. It's a direct reflection on the people in the seats and, you know, the people who... And the other thing, too, actually, which bothered me is with these MCS chants that happen, they're, a lot of them are pre-planned, right? Like, they're discussed in advance. They're thrown out on Twitter. People are like, hey, what about this? They're spitball. This was, like, pre-thought out. Yeah, and there, this was the best they could do.
There was a guy on Twitter that took responsibility for it very
quickly. Him and I had, we went a little bit toe-to-toe, over it. And he ended up backpedaling, right? Like, initially, he was very much admitting that it was a sexist chant, and he was a fucking asshole. He just, the things he was saying, like telling women who are complaining to get their bitching ass back in the kitchen where they belong, they have no right to have an opinion, and then he was like, no, it was because, you know, because Katy Perry is a brilliant artist and Corey Perry is a good hockey player. Uh-huh. It's like, sure. What bothered me about it, it wasn't even the chant that bothered me. What bothered me was the aftermath of the chant, where people who were defending it, and women in particular, actually, who would state, like, oh, I'm not offended, so it's not offensive. And then would kind of dig their heels in, and, you know, you're an idiot if you think you're offended by it. And rather than just, you know, listening to why somebody is offended, is the piece that we were missing, is that you're not listening to find out why anybody else is offended. You're not offended, so anybody else who is an idiot, and that's the end of the story, and you shouldn't be offended because as a woman, I'm not, so you're dumb, and that's all there is to it. But what you need to do is, even if you're not offended, is maybe take a look and see why somebody is. And you don't have to change your mind and now be offended. Just be open-minded as to potentially why. It's bothersome to somebody. It was just so closed-minded on both sides of the argument, and mm-hmm. It was just a stupid thing to argue about, and I'm actually kind of irritated that I brought it up, because now we're still talking about it weeks later.
You know, you were saying that True North had no responsibility for it, and I agree with you there, but the story kind of died down a little bit and then blew up again because Gary Bettman was asked about it and said there was nothing wrong with it, which put that, you know, then the people on the anti-chant side said, well, that's a poor reflection on the culture of the NHL, and then there was another Sunday where there was an article written about it, and I fell asleep, and when I woke up, my Twitter was going nuts, so... But that's what happens, right?
Outrage. Well, the target demographic of the NHL, though, is men, primarily, middle-class men, roughly 25 to 40 years old. That's the target demographic. And, I mean, of course, you're comparing Katy Perry, and Katy Perry's target demographic is young girls, roughly ages 8 to 15. So to be comparing the two, too, like, you mean they're worlds apart. Like, not saying that no hockey fans like Katy Perry and Katy Perry fans don't like hockey, mm-hmm. but your two target demographics are so far removed from one another, and it was just bad.
I've got a solution to this whole thing. When they do the Winter Classic here in a couple of years at the stadium, Katy Perry redoes her halftime show from the Super Bowl.
Which would be amazing.
There you go.
And she's got to come in on a duck, though.
Exactly. Yes. And then and then everybody's happy, right?
And everybody wins, except for all the hockey fans who are like, why are we watching Katy Perry?
Yeah, well, we were chanting for her, so we obviously wanted her, right?
Well, and that was the other thing, too. It's like, just trying to use her as an insult, whether you like her or not, is kind of irrelevant, because she's hugely successful. She's commercially successful. She's wealthy beyond the scope of imagination. As she sells out arenas, she plays the halftime show. So you can sit there and talk about, you were saying it because she sucks. You know, numbers are going to say, not so much.
Corey Perry is an awesome hockey player, but Katy Perry is infinitely more successful than he is. Maybe she may not be a better person, but I was hoping that you could give a couple of plugs for some of the campaigns that you have coming up.
I have nothing really coming up right now, but keep your eye out for Fill My Ford or Five Hole for Food, because it is coming up soon, and I know we're going to have a challenge, and I know London Drug St. Patel is going to have something big. I don't know what it is yet, but please support it. It's for a great cause. And in November, buy chocolate mustaches from me. I'll even start taking your orders, like, right now. Yes, get in touch with me now, and then guarantee you'll get the freshest mustaches.
So everybody keep your eyes peeled for that. And again, if you want to find Lisa on Twitter, it is at MSBEHAVIOR. And you can give her a follow. And then if you want to block her, you can block her. But I would recommend that you keep following her. You actually also have a blog, right? LisaWebinger.com?
That's right, yeah.
So, and I think there's a link on your Twitter to that site as well, right?
There is. If you can't get enough of me in 140 characters, you can go over to my blog where I post more stuff about absolutely nothing of any sort of relevance. So you can get all kinds of absolutely nothing by following me. And I appreciate it. I like when people comment because you do meet a lot of interesting people that way. But yeah, I'm kind of an open book. I put things out there. I'm a very embarrassing human being. I do stupid things all the time. And I think people should know that I do stupid things because it entertains me. And I would love to know that I'm not the only one out there who makes a complete clown of herself all the time. But
So give her a follow and send her some comments and be active and be social, everybody. And if you want to take a lesson from someone, Lisa, you've actually inspired me. When you did Fill My Ford, I brought two bags of food over to one of the local co-op stores in response to it. So keep doing what you're doing,
because
there are people out there listening. So keep it up.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on. It's a lot of fun.
No problem. Thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it. So there you have it. That was Lisa Webinger, known as @NizBehavior over on Twitter. And her blog can also be found at www.lisawebinger.com. So definitely go and give her a follow. She is well worth checking out. The band that you've been hearing over the course of this episode is called Criaturos. They're from Boston, Massachusetts. They released an album in 2014 called Popsicle, which you can find over on Bandcamp. And the track was called Weird Queen. We're going to give it a listen as we close the show. Thank you very much for listening to Beyond the Handle once again, and have a great week.